Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Evidence-Based Identification and Treatment of Juvenile Idiopathic Arthritis, Implementing Biologics in Practice, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Norman T. Illowite, MD. Dr. Illowite is a professor of pediatrics, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Chief, Division of Rheumatology, the Children's Hospital at Montefiore, Bronx, New York. Dr. Illowite has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation and Centocor. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Genentech. Dr. Illowite does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Illowite does intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to provide practitioners with the latest information on the management of juvenile idiopathic arthritis and its various subgroups, including the implementation of biologic therapies. This activity is supported by Genentech. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello, I'm Dr. Norman Illowite, Professor of Pediatrics at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and Chief of the Division of Rheumatology at the Children's Hospital at Montefiore in the Bronx, New York. I'd like to welcome you to this Medscape CME CE video lecture discussion entitled Evidence-Based Identification and Treatment of Juvenile Idiopathic Arthritis. We will have only time for the highlights, and there are many different permutations of treatment that are covered in the manuscript that I encourage you to review. In this session, we will classify patients with JIA into the newly described treatment categories depending upon affected joints and systemic involvement. We will evaluate recommended guideline-based treatment and algorithms for various types of JIA outlined in the treatment recommendations. We will evaluate the evidence base for traditional DMARD and biologic therapies in the management of patients with JIA. A little bit about the process leading up to the guidelines that were approved by the American College of Rheumatology. We used a research and development UCLA appropriateness method review process. This involves two distinct groups of experts, who include pediatric rheumatologists from Europe, the United States, and Canada, as well as a general pediatrician, an advanced practice nurse, and a patient advocate. There were two panels so comprised, one with a core expert panel, charged with a systematic review of the literature from 1966 to 2009. 786 articles were identified using this process, and 221 meeting criteria were included in the analysis. A summary was prepared by this core expert panel, and then the panel was charged with the development of clinical scenarios, which numbered 1,539, characterizing hypothetical patients using all possible combinations of key clinical parameters relevant to the decision process. A separate task force panel evaluated the scenarios and voted as to the appropriateness or inappropriateness of each medical intervention. Differences in opinion from the first round of voting were discussed at a face-to-face meeting, followed by a second round of voting. There was no need to push for consensus in this process, as only the appropriateness and the inappropriateness of therapy are being presented if there was consensus. Ratings were used by the CEP panel to create recommendations from the clinical scenarios. Interventions were considered appropriate or inappropriate, and if there was no consensus, the guidelines are silent on that intervention. The task was a formidable one, and certain goals were outside the scope of the guidelines. For instance, the economic cost of JIA and its management were not considered in the recommendations. Contraindications and intolerance to therapeutic agents were not considered. The method of tapering or discontinuing medication when disease was inactive was also not considered. And we were unable to consider agents that were not widely commercially available in 2009 when this process began. For instance, canakinumab, rilonacept, and tocilizumab were not discussed. We did not consider systemic glucocorticoids for synovitis, although we did consider systemic glucocorticoids for the treatment of active systemic features and systemic JIA, as well as we did consider intraarticular corticosteroids. And the treatment of uveitis, enthesitis, and macrophage activation syndrome were also not considered due to time constraints. First, let's consider the key clinical parameters that entered into our decision making. Number one is the JIA treatment groups, and we chose to deviate from the International League of Associations for Rheumatology classification of JIA, which is pictured on the right of the slide. Rather, these homogeneous groups do not necessarily dictate therapy. So instead, we considered the following treatment groups in JIA, including a history of four or fewer joints, a history of five or more joints, active sacroiliac arthritis, systemic arthritis with active systemic features, systemic arthritis with active arthritis. And we also considered features of poor prognosis, disease activity, and current therapy in making recommendations. Let's first consider the features of poor prognosis. These are either present or absent, and they differ depending on the JIA treatment group and are defined later in the presentation. So, for instance, with a history of four or fewer joints in that treatment group, you must satisfy at least one of the following criteria to have a feature of poor prognosis. And these features include arthritis of the hip or cervical spine, arthritis of the ankle or wrist with marked or prolonged inflammatory marker elevation, or radiographic damage defined as erosions or joint space narrowing. For the JIA treatment group of five or more joints involved, you also must satisfy at least one of the criteria, which include arthritis of the hip or cervical spine, positive rheumatoid factor or cyclic citrullinated peptide antibodies, radiographic damage, again defined as erosions or joint space narrowing. For patients with active sacroiliac arthritis, the poor prognostic feature is radiographic damage of any joint with erosions or joint space narrowing. In patients with systemic arthritis with active systemic features and without arthritis, the features of poor prognosis are defined after 6 months of disease duration and include the active systemic disease defined by fever or elevated inflammatory markers, or the requirement for treatment with systemic glucocorticoids at 6 months. In patients with the treatment group systemic arthritis with active arthritis but without systemic features, the features are arthritis of the hip or radiographic damage, again defined as erosions or joint space narrowing. We recognize that some patients with systemic arthritis may have both systemic features and active arthritis, and I will discuss the treatment of those patients as well, although the official guidelines are silent on those types of patients. In considering parameters that might influence treatment in patients with a history of arthritis for less than four joints, we considered disease activity. For low disease activity, they must satisfy all four of the following criteria: one or fewer active joints, and an active joint is defined as not a swelling not due to deformity, or if no swelling is present, then limitation of motion and either pain on motion or tenderness. The second parameter would be ESR or CRP being normal. Third parameter would be MD global assessment less than 3 out of a scale of 10. And patient-parent global assessment less than 2 out of 10. For high disease activity in patients with arthritis of fewer than four joints. You must satisfy at least three of the following criteria, which include two or more active joints, a SED rate or CRP greater than two times the limit of normal, an MD global assessment of greater than or equal to 7 out of 10, and a patient-parent global assessment greater than or equal to 4 out of 10. For patients with moderate disease activity, they do not satisfy either low or high disease activity. In patients with a history of five or more joints, low disease activity, they must satisfy all the following criteria, which includes four or fewer active joints, SED rate or CRP normal, MD global assessment less than 4 out of 10, patient-parent global assessment less than 2 out of 10. For high disease activity in this treatment group, one needs at least three of the following: eight or more active joints, a SED rate or CRP greater than two times the upper limit of normal, an MD global assessment greater than or equal to 7 out of 10, and a patient-parent global assessment of greater than or equal to 5 out of 10. For patients with active sacroiliac arthritis, low disease activity must satisfy all of the following: normal back flexion, SED rate or CRP normal, MD global assessment less than 4, patient-parent global assessment less than 2. High disease activity must satisfy at least 3, a SED rate or CRP greater than 2 times the upper limit of normal, an MD global assessment of greater than or equal to 7, and a patient or parent global assessment of greater than or equal to 4. Again, moderate patients would not satisfy either low or high disease activity criteria. For patients with systemic arthritis and active systemic features, only two levels of activity were defined, one the lower level being active fever and an MD global assessment of less than 7 out of 10, and two the upper level being active fever and systemic features of high disease activity that require the MD global assessment to be greater than or equal to 7. For patients with systemic arthritis with active arthritis, low disease activity must satisfy all the following: four or fewer active joints, a SED rate or CRP that's normal, MD global assessment less than 4, and patient-parent global assessment less than 2. High disease activity must satisfy at least three of the following: eight or more active joints, SED rate or CRP greater than two times the upper limit of normal, MD global assessment greater than or equal to 7, and a patient-parent global assessment of greater than or equal to 5. Again, moderate patients would satisfy neither the low or high criteria. And lastly, the last parameter that was considered were aspects of current therapy. In considering current therapy, we assumed that the maximum typical tolerated doses were being administered. For instance, for methotrexate, this is 15 milligrams per meter square, or approximately 0.6 milligrams per kilogram given parenterally. All regimens had adjunct single nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug and intra-articular steroid administration being given concurrently, if necessary. The duration, unless specified, was long enough to assess response to therapy. And initiating therapy means really either adding therapy or switching to therapy. And the recommendation of the panel was to add therapy if a partial response to the previous therapy had been achieved, and switching therapy if it had not. Medication intolerance was not considered. The RAND method allows for scoring resident evidence to level A, B, or C, or D. And in other words, low-grade evidence, C or D, is not the same as absence of evidence, and this process allowed us to consider sources of low-grade evidence. Level A is equivalent to a randomized clinical trial. Level B, a non-randomized controlled study with extrapolations from randomized clinical trials. Level C, uncontrolled studies or extrapolations from non-randomized controlled trials or marked extrapolations from randomized controlled trials, including extrapolation from adult to JIA data or extrapolation from another phenotype of JIA to the phenotype of JIA being considered. And level D is expert opinion without supporting published evidence. So the results of the panel's considerations after considering these clinical parameters. First, let's look into our patients with a history of arthritis of four or fewer joints. And this would include patients from persistent oligoarticular, psoriatic arthritis, enthesitis-related arthropathy, and undifferentiated JIA using the ILAR criteria. This is an overview of the treatment of patients with arthritis of four or fewer joints. There are some patients who will be treated with NSAID monotherapy. These are patients without a poor prognostic features present, with a low disease activity and no contractures. But the majority of patients will get glucocorticoid joint injections, and those with an inadequate response to glucocorticoid joint injections would receive methotrexate or TNF-alpha inhibition. There are patients who would go directly to treatment with methotrexate, however. Sulfasalazine is also appropriate instead of methotrexate in enthesitis-related arthritis patients with a history of arthritis in four or fewer joints. In patients who do not have those features and who do not have an adequate response to NSAID therapy, you would consider glucocorticoid joint injections. And for those that do not have an adequate response to joint injections, methotrexate. But there are patients who would go directly to glucocorticoid joint injections and methotrexate, depending on their disease features. And then other patients would recommend initiating TNF-alpha inhibition therapy if they failed or if they didn't adequately respond to methotrexate. For patients with a history of arthritis for four or fewer joints, patients with a high disease activity and poor prognostic features, we recommend starting methotrexate therapy. This would include patients with, for instance, a knee and wrist that are active, a SID rate that's high, and an MD global assessment of 7. And this is evidence level C. Also, patients who've had an initial joint injection, if their disease activity remains moderate and poor prognostic features are present, we would recommend initiating methotrexate therapy. Or if their disease activity is high and poor prognostic features are either absent or present, we would also recommend initiating methotrexate therapy. This would include a patient, for instance, with an active hip and an MD global assessment of 4. For patients with low disease activity and no poor prognosis, through their course, they would not progress to methotrexate according to the recommendations. And this is evidence level C. Following repeat joint injections, patients with disease activity that's low and poor prognostic features that are present, or in patients with disease activity that's moderate, and regardless of whether poor prognostic features are present, we would recommend initiation of methotrexate therapy. We acknowledge that sulfasalazine is also appropriated in enthesitis-related arthritis patients with a history of arthritis in four or fewer joints. For instance, this latter patient would include a patient with bilateral knees that are active, and this is evidence level C. Let's focus now on patients who've been on methotrexate and who TNF-alpha inhibition may be considered. Following 3 months of methotrexate, if the disease activity is moderate or high and poor prognostic features are present, we would recommend initiation of therapy with a TNF inhibitor. This would be, for example, a patient with knees and a wrist that are active, as well as radiographic damage on plain radiographs. And this is evidence level C. Similarly, following 6 months of methotrexate therapy, if the disease activity is high, we would recommend initiation of anti-TNF therapy. This, for instance, this would include a patient with knee and ankle that are active, and a SID rate that's elevated and an MD global assessment of 7. And this is evidence level C. Now let's focus on patients with a history of arthritis of 5 or more joints. This would include patients with extended oligoarticular JIA, rheumatoid factor positive or negative polyarticular JIA, psoriatic arthritis, enthesitis-related arthritis, or undifferentiated arthritis using the ILAR criteria. This is the overview of the treatment recommendations for patients with a history of arthritis in 5 or more joints. In general, most patients will get methotrexate, These include patients with a disease activity that's high or moderate, or those with poor prognostic features that are present, or after NSAID therapy for a month. All those kinds of patients would be eligible for methotrexate treatment. Leflunomide could also be used as an alternative to methotrexate. If there was an inadequate response to methotrexate, then TNF-alpha inhibition would be indicated. And if the response to TNF-alpha inhibition is inadequate, then either a second TNF inhibitor or abatacept would be recommended as therapy. So let's focus on patients who've received methotrexate or leflunomide, and following 3 months of methotrexate, their disease activity is moderate or high. We would recommend TNF-alpha inhibition. This would include a patient with 5 active joints, and the level of evidence is B. In patients after 6 months of therapy with low disease activity, we would also recommend initiation of anti-TNF therapy, and this would be a patient with 1 active joint, and the level of evidence is B. Focusing on patients now who've received a TNF inhibitor, following 4 months of TNF-alpha inhibition, if the disease activity is moderate or poor prognostic features are present or absent, then a second TNF inhibitor should be used, or abatacept. And the level of evidence for this is C for TNF-alpha inhibition, the second TNF-alpha inhibitor, or B for abatacept. Now let's consider patients with active sacroiliac arthritis, and we're going to focus on those that might be considered for TNF-alpha inhibition. So considering patients with active sacroiliac arthritis, following NSAID therapy, if disease activity is high and poor prognostic features are present, we would recommend initiation of anti-TNF-alpha therapy. This would include a patient with a SED rate that's elevated, an MD global assessment of 7, and plain radiographs that show damage. This is evidence level C. Following 3 months of methotrexate or sulfasalazine therapy, if the disease activity is high and or if the disease activity is moderate and poor prognostic features are present, we would similarly recommend inhibition of TNF. This would include a patient whose SED rate is elevated and MD global assessment of 7. The evidence level is C. Following 6 months of methotrexate or sulfasalazine therapy, if the disease activity is moderate, we would also recommend inhibition of TNF. This would include a patient with limited back flexion, and the evidence level is C. Moving on to systemic arthritis with active systemic features, just to remind you that poor prognostic factors in this condition are evaluated at 6 months after diagnosis. And we also recognize that patients may have both systemic features and active arthritis, and we will discuss that at the end. In general, NSAIDs are given during the assessment. However, there are some patients who will progress directly to anakinra or to systemic glucocorticoids as their disease dictates. Let's consider patients with systemic arthritis and active systemic features who are receiving systemic glucocorticoids. In such patients, if the disease activity is represented with presence of fever, we would recommend initiation of anakinra IL-1 inhibition therapy. And this is evidence level C. In patients at diagnosis who have fever and poor prognostic features are present, we would recommend an immediate initiation of anakinra. This would include a patient with fever, a high SED rate for 6 months, and the evidence level is C. Let's now consider systemic arthritis with active arthritis. And if you remember, the disease activity parameters are similar to those with a history of arthritis in 5 or more joints. As an overview, essentially patients are eligible for methotrexate, and if they have an inadequate response to methotrexate, for TNF inhibition or IL-1 inhibition. For example, following 3 months of methotrexate therapy, if the disease activity is moderate or high, we would recommend initiation of a biologic, either inhibition of TNF-alpha or IL-1. This would include a patient with 5 active joints. and the evidence level is B for TNF inhibition and C for IL-1 inhibition. As far as safety monitoring is concerned, for NSAID use, we recommend a serum creatinine, urinalysis, CBC, liver enzymes be performed prior to or soon after initiation of treatment, evidence level D. And these studies should be repeated twice yearly for patients receiving long-term daily NSAIDs, and again, level D. The study should be repeated once yearly if taking 3 to 4 days a week of NSAIDs. As far as methotrexate monitoring, serum creatinine, CBC, liver enzymes prior to initiation of methotrexate should be performed at level, evidence level D. They should be repeated shortly after initiation, approximately 1 month later, and then every 1 to 2 months after increasing the dose, again, level evidence level D. They should be repeated every 3 to 4 months in patients on stable doses of methotrexate. C, liver function tests, if greater than 2 times the upper limit of normal, would necessitate decreasing the dose of methotrexate or temporarily discontinuing it. Liver function tests greater than or equal to 3 times the upper limit of normal would require discontinuation. This is evidence level C. As far as TNF inhibition therapy safety monitoring is concerned, CBC, liver enzymes, and serum creatinine should be performed prior to initiation and repeated approximately every 3 to 6 months thereafter. A PPD prior to initiation and repeated yearly PPDs should be performed. And this is evidence levels C and D. Antibody testing for infection with hepatitis B or hepatitis C prior to initiating methotrexate or TNF inhibitors in patients with risk factors should also be performed, evidence level D. Now, there are a number of caveats to these guidelines. They were intended to provide guidance for particular patterns of practice and not to dictate care of an individual patient. In other words, to complement but not replace individualized care. They're subject to periodic revision as warranted by the evolution of medical knowledge and technology and practice. In fact, the effort to develop these guidelines began in 2009 when biologic therapies such as canakinumab, rilonacept, tocilizumab, rituximab were not being considered because of the limited availability. However, it should be acknowledged currently that tocilizumab is the only drug that's FDA approved for the treatment of systemic JIA. And we would recommend other IL-1 inhibitors in place of anakinra, I believe, if we were starting the process currently. Also, we didn't discuss rituximab at all, and the committee did recommend that patients who are rheumatoid factor positive and CCP positive who fail both a first-line TNF or a second-line TNF or abatacept be eligible for rituximab therapy. In closing, I'd like to thank you for joining us for this Medscape education activity. Please continue on to the post-test to obtain CME nursing credit for this program. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Evidence-Based Identification and Treatment of Juvenile Idiopathic Arthritis, Implementing Biologics in Practice. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.